Let me get my mic on first. Let me welcome you to the Monday, March 4th meeting of the Police, Judicial, and Legal Committee of Mount Pleasant Town Council. And we are where we said we would be when we said we would be here. Our agenda is before us. Let's get to item one, approval of the minutes of the February 4th, 19 meeting.
So move.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are approved. Public comments. And let me ask, as things transpire with council, it's always best if you are here to address a particular issue to address it now, because you don't know what might get tabled, delayed, or whatever. And it's sad if people leave and say, well, I went to speak, but I didn't. My issue never got brought up. So I'd urge you, if you want to speak, speak now, and you will be heard because nothing changes right now. So anyone, public comments, 2 minutes, name and address. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
My name is Steve Brock, 34 Hooptown Road in Mount Pleasant. First of all, I would like to commend you on actually taking up this subject, which has caused me a few sleepless nights. You might know I'm something of a zealot on some of these issues. One thing I'd like to say at the beginning, and it's just a personal belief, I think open government is an absolute right of the people. We should know what you're doing, everything you're saying. And I know that's not a practical outlook, because we can't know it all. But I do believe if you ask yourself the question, are we doing everything we can to inform people? Are we giving as much information as we can, and is it the best? I don't think many of the questions that face you are that difficult. Nevertheless, I'd like to address one or two. Executive sessions, I've seen on the on this statement at the end of your agenda is that it says you may act on things out of executive session. That's always bothered me a little bit because it doesn't go on to say upon amendment of the agenda. And I don't know where the sound comes down on that because I haven't heard it spoken to. But agendas, as you know, can't be, or matters cannot be taken up that are not on the agenda. That's found in the case that I took to the Supreme Court some years ago. Because if you take that away, it doesn't matter when you schedule your executive sessions. If you're going in for the to discuss or act, or not discuss, but to deal with in whatever way, the matters that are allowed by the 30-4-70, it doesn't matter because you're not going to make a decision. You're in there for the purposes of taking up matters that you believe are better discussed privately by state law. So put them at the beginning, put them at the end. It doesn't matter. You're not going to do anything out of an executive session that's not on the agenda. And I hope we're together on that one. The committee system has always bothered me for one reason. The committees over a period of 20 years have become very powerful to the point they often skip the part where they are not supposed to act on matters. They're supposed to recommend. There was a recommendation to leave committee reports out of the meetings. That would be a bad idea if the committees are operating as they should. Committees take up matters that are referred from council. They don't start here. Referred from council, you investigate, you do everything you can to clarify whatever it is, and you take it to council and present it. If that's done appropriately, you really can't leave it off the agenda. It's important to hear those reports that are going to council. The public comments, just one thing on that. I've sat through a lot of meetings, and you have too, where these public comments include awards and presentations that seem to go on for an awfully long time. I would really love to see you take that out of the beginning of the meetings. I think you'd have enormously more productive meetings. Move them to a special meeting or whatever you think is appropriate. I just think your time is better spent and the public's time is better spent with the business of the town. That's all I have, and thank you again.
Thank you, Mr. Brock. I think you'll find that we're thinking alike on a lot of ways. Anyone else? All right, that will close the public comments. Item number three is police matters, employee years of service recognition. Chief Ritchie.
Yes, sir. FTO, Bradley Strode, come up for me, in the center. Yeah, right here is fine if you want to face. somewhere, you got a lot of folks in here.
Friends,
sorry about that. Mayor, members of the committee, in our audience, I have the honor and privilege of recognizing FTO Bradley Strode for 10 years of service to the town of Mount Pleasant. Mayor, you'll appreciate this. He's a Citadel grad. So he's from the local area. Then he went on to serve in the Marine Corps. And so he's one of our veterans serving. And over the 10 years, he has worked his way up through the ranks to be a field training officer, which is probably, in my mind, one of the most important jobs at the police department. He's taken the brand new officers, teaching them the Mount Pleasant way, how to be a proper Mount Pleasant police officer, teaching community policing and what's important to our residents. And not to mention, he's teaching them how to be safe, obviously, and to do the job as professionally as they can. He's also a member of our SWAT team and one of our snipers, which is a very elite group to be on to begin with. And hopefully we'll never have to use it, but I know he and the rest of the team are very well trained, and they take their job very seriously. During FTO's 10 years, he's also been very, very much involved in different community outreach programs we do, and has immersed himself into just making sure that not only police services are met, but the other services and needs of our citizens are met. So with that, I want to congratulate you. In 10 years, I look for many more years of service. Well done.
Thank you, Chief. Keep hiring the Citadel grads, will you?
At least my veterans.
All right. Is that the only one?
Yes, sir.
I didn't know if there was another. Okay. Judicial matters, item number 4, there are no agenda items. Number 5, legal matters. The first is consideration of a firefighter staffing ordinance. Is this a result of the referral from the last committee meeting?
Yes, sir.
I mean the last
council meeting.
Okay.
Yes,
can someone set up what it is that that we are to consider?
I can do my best, sir.
Okay.
Certainly the chief could fill in. But the idea is that right now we run a minimum of 3 per vehicle, and this would take it to a minimum of 4. We run minimum of 3, and at various times because of depending on who's working that day, sick leave, vacation leave, training, whatever it is, we run somewhere above 3 normally. Some days it's 4, some days it's more, some days it's less, but never below 3. So this proposed ordinance to be developed would take this amount to a minimum of 4 all the time and require staff to make sure through overtime or whatever that that level is met.
Okay. Chief, do you have any, I mean, not making you comment, but if you have any you would like to volunteer, or we could just do questions, whichever.
Yes, sir. So, not to offer an opinion, but in my mind, we've also approved our strategic plan. We appreciate that. Staffing's addressed in that, and staffing's an important thing, and 100% support staffing. I worry that, you know, with our revenue outlook, that if we move in this direction right now, it ties our hands to be committed to that, and maybe that alone, and the majority of our strat plan may not be funded. Austin did it. That's one of the models that was offered as an example. But they moved that way after they had already had that staffing for 6 years. So they vetted it. They were able to make sure that they could fiscally fund it and also that it worked for their jurisdiction.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, during our finance committee meeting, there was a couple issues relating to the fire department that we've asked to go back to the fire committee, Mr. Bremer's committee. And so certainly I think this should go back to them as well. And while they're looking at the other issues, then that's one issue as well that they can look at and then come back to us with a recommendation.
Right. Okay. Yeah, we don't do fire truck staffing here, but we do ordinances. Did anybody else have any questions? If not, I have a couple I'd like to ask, and I have some of legal. Yes, sir.
Thank you. Just to reset the conversation, while these are crucial policy decisions and absolutely important, this is the police, judicial, and legal, and as I understand the agenda item, it's consideration of an ordinance. And so hopefully the focus is on whether there could be an ordinance to effectuate this, and I just wondered
not staffing, not firefighting details.
That's correct.
So my question of you is, if this is done by ordinance, what constitutes a violation of that ordinance?
Sure, and you've just touched on legal's concern, which is if this is done by ordinance, any action that may or may not meet that ordinance, we'd be in violation of our own ordinances.
And who enforces that?
Well, the town would have to enforce that, or we could be subject to civil liability, potentially, in an incident for violation of our own ordinances, which we would We do not dictate generally staffing levels and HR matters of this sort by ordinance, and for those reasons.
So in the Austin law, what is the penalty for violation of that ordinance?
I don't know if they lay that out in their service, a short ordinance. And they do give some provisions when they don't have to do it, you know, in an emergency situation. Say there was a disaster and they had to staff multiple trucks additionally. But let me see if there's any – I don't see any kind of enforceable thing or how they do it.
Have there ever been any arrest, violations, citations in Austin? I mean, is Chief going to have to send men out to inspect how many people left fire station on a vehicle?
I don't think it's couched as a criminal penalty ordinance like many of our ordinances are civil matters. There's not going to be a penalty associated with it. But typically, I would think that most of our HR matters and staffing levels are flexible, need to be flexible. And while that could be written into an ordinance, that ordinance would have to be amended most every time there was a change in policy or procedure. And that's okay, but I think there is a reason why we do not govern our HR matters by ordinance, and that is just due to the difficult and unwieldy nature of it.
Right. So, any questions of Mr. Pagliarini? Yes, sir. Mr. Bustos.
I just want to make sure I am.
Yes. Sorry.
I just want to make sure I understand. So if there was a circumstance, if we had this ordinance and if someone was sick or whatever, if the ordinance said four, and for whatever set of reasons you wound up with three, that truck couldn't move?
I think that would be a challenge for our leadership, that to take any action that would be in perceived violation of our ordinances now, without question, emergencies, situations, justifications always exist. But that is the precise issue. If there is a technical violation of our ordinances, how do we write that ordinance in a way that provides our leaders the ability? I mean, we can write that in emergency situations, as our chief just explained. I think there are emergency situations covered. So to answer your question, I think we can write it in such a way to hopefully prevent that from happening. I don't believe we can predict all situations and scenarios, though, in an ordinance.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Did you want to make a comment? Yes, sir. Name and address, and you have 2 minutes.
You have the stopwatch. Kevin Goodane, 3032 River Vista Way. This ordinance would prevent what happened over the last 10 or 15 years. We went from four ladder trucks down to two. And nobody knew what happened. Why'd that occur? There may have been an obscure fire committee, which really doesn't meet regularly, so there's really no public following on that. Let's be fair. I mean, it's really just when the fire committee met 3 and 4 times a year, they don't have a regular following. The public's not plugged into it. If council has to change a law, they're going to notice that, and that's what it does. And it does give the chief discretion. Of course, when a firefighter's sick, you're not going to put somebody with a broken leg on the truck to get to four. The chief's going to say, well, we have an emergency. Somebody broke their leg. What it does is it brings us up to a level of professionalism that this size town needs. We have buildings being built. We're approving properties to turn into hotels. We have a new city being built there along the waterfront in Patriots Point. And the first new engine company has 3 firefighters. You cannot stretch a standpipe hose with 3 firefighters. One has to pump at the truck, and 2 firefighters are not stretching a hose off a standpipe. You have to wait for the second one. With 4 firefighters, you're getting there quicker. The water's getting there. And that's really the issue. It's spelled out for the 4 months we had reviews. The chief brought things up along the way saying, yes, it's better to have 4 at a high-rise fire. And that's it in a nutshell. The question is, do we leave things with our fingers crossed, or do we say it's time to grow the fire department to the size of the town? And I'd like to see it come to a vote. Let's see all the people who are against having best fire service, you know, whether it's here or council, and let's see who wants it. And I think the public wants it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Committee members, is there any desired action at this time?
I have a question as to this concept of moving to four per truck, is this part of the strategic plan of the fire department?
Yes, well, part of it. For our ladder trucks, that's where we want to go. So for the two ladders we have, you've already approved six additional personnel, which brings us up to four minimum on those trucks. And then for the third ladder that we asked for on the strat plan, we also asked to have that at four. So we are moving in that direction with our ladder trucks. And not to say that we may never get there with this, but that's just not in our five-year plan.
So this proposed ordinance is not in the strategic plan. You do have additional staffing in the strategic plan,
right,
but not to the number that
right.
is
so we're not looking
by
to put
ordinance.
Those on our engines at this time. We're looking to upstaff our ladders with a minimum of four, kind of reconfigure our deployment model, and that's in our strat plan for 5 years. But not the engine piece, not the full rollout of four on everything.
Is that it? You still have the full? I just wasn't sure.
What standards does our fire department adhere to in the decision to have three minimum per truck, the goal of the strategic plan? Is there a national standard we adhere to? Are we an accredited fire department? Is that correct? What metric are we using right now for our existing strategic plan and our existing staffing?
Right. So good question. And you'll hear the NFPA used a lot, and that is kind of the national standard. They're a nonprofit organization, and they're a benchmark organization. So for a lot of things, for our gear, for our apparatus, we look at their recommendation and try to adhere to it. But it's a very big standard, and to fully implement the NFPA would cost millions and millions of dollars. So you know, a lot of people say, oh, well, you're picking and choosing. No, we're trying to find the things that fit our needs, and we move towards that. So you will hear the staffing NFPA does recommend four on each truck. But again, a lot of communities our size just can't afford it and things of that nature. But again, we're taking a bite out of that with the ladder trucks right now because that's where we feel we can make a big difference, and especially with the placement in the center of town of another ladder truck. You know, Mr. Kinney mentioned that we did have four ladder trucks in the past, but those were staffed with two personnel. So it is a reduction of the number of pumps on the street, but they weren't as effective because it was just two personnel. Now we currently have two ladder trucks with the addition of captains on there, so now we have that leadership. We also have four personnel, and now moving toward a third with four people and a captain on each truck. So we did reduce a little bit. We're building back up, and those trucks are even better at this point, staffing and leadership-wise.
I guess if we have a strategic plan for a fire department and we are moving in the direction of fulfilling that strategic plan, I guess I don't, for me personally, I don't see why an ordinance that goes beyond that plan is necessary at this time.
Thank you. Any other discussion? All right, there being none, we will move on to item B, 5B, consideration of a resolution supporting H-3355, also known as the Free of the Hands-Free While Driving Bill.
Yes, sir, I believe Mr. Brimmer, if he is
there
in
he
the
is.
Room, requested this item be on, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Good morning. Bob Brimmer, 2380 Parsonage Woods Lane. Thank you for the opportunity to bring this up. As you all know, as council members, we get a lot of calls and complaints about traffic in this town. The number one complaint typically is the volume of vehicles on the road. But a very close second for me anyway is the condition, the safety of the roads, and the number of people who seem to be distracted by electronic devices. I was approached about a year and a half ago by a few residents asking if the town could put in place a hands-free ordinance to make our roads safer. I researched that and determined through state statute that we cannot do that by ourselves. It has to be a statewide law. Last year, Representative Taylor in Aiken proposed a hands-free ordinance at the state level. It got through some committees but didn't get done in time for it to be passed by the end of the session. He has reintroduced House Bill 3355, which is a hands-free ordinance or hands-free law, basically increasing the fines for using an electronic device and also just extending that beyond texting to the use of any electronic devices. I'd like to see the town support that by a resolution saying that this is a public safety issue and we really have to address the safety conditions of our roads. I believe y'all have received a copy of the text via email, so I would just ask for this committee's support in that.
Thank you, Mr. Byrne. Appreciate it. Yes, sir.
No, I mean, I agree. I tell you what, the roads are getting more and more dangerous. And you know, as traffic gets backed up, when you go to a stoplight, you don't have a lot of time to get through the stoplight. And if the first car is looking down, texting on their phone while the light's green, you end up causing more and more traffic because it gets backed up. It doesn't flow as freely, I think. So I think that's another big issue there is it also affects our traffic. Not only is it a safety issue, but I think it would help our traffic be able to move well, you know, and not have one person looking at texting on their phone holding up the traffic, you know.
Yes.
I also agree. I think that I was surprised, actually, that the there's a ban on texting while driving in the state level, but the fine is so minimal that people don't care. It's like $25. It's ridiculous. Nobody is following that rule. And I was very surprised that there was not already a hands-free law in place. There's so many other states have it. So I'm fully in support of a resolution to support this bill.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Chief, how many accidents do we have that are attributable to cell phones and the like?
As you have the data here in front of me, just last year, 2018, I'll share with you our officers of 33 citations. All of them were, like you said, $25 fine, all of them paid their fines. Now, for the collisions, we were only able to attribute texting to 6 collisions because it is so difficult the way state law is written because you're allowed to pull up GPS, you're allowed to do so many things on your phone that we have to get them to admit to us, I was texting, that's why I was involved in the collision. So last year, we were able to attribute 6 collisions to texting, which we obviously there's probably many, many more, mm-hmm. just being able to reach that level of proving it in court.
Okay, thanks. Does this just apply to phones? I mean, obviously a radio is an electronic device, and satellite radio, God knows what else.
Yeah, Mr. Bustos, this there's a extensive definition of this in the statute, but it's phones. It's any electronic device, iPads, phones, GPS. So if you have those, you have to be able to either use Bluetooth some hands-free device. So it'd be operating any electronic device that's handheld. Handheld, yes, sir. And just as one other point, our legal staff did a great job of just very quickly developing a draft resolution that you all should have a copy of as well that basically lays out our support for this. So I would ask for that to be part of the motion and passed on to council as well.
Thank you.
I'm kind of lukewarm on this. Because, you know, I think we put our officers in a kind of a no-win situation because, I just don't know how you can prove somebody unless they give you their phone and say, look through my phone. I'll probably support this, but, just as a practical matter, I think it's really going to, even if they make it statewide, I think it's difficult to enforce.
And if you read the statute, it does say that police officers are not allowed, I believe, under this statute to be able to take your phone and to look through it. That's prohibited.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. If someone doesn't say, go ahead and say, see the time, that it's virtually impossible to do that.
Yes, sir.
Well, anyway, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Kevin Canane, 3032 River Vista Way. I live somewhere that had this law, and I have to admit, Mr. Bustos is right on that. I have to admit, Mr. Bustos is right on that. Where it comes in is you can prove statutory negligence if there's a lawsuit. You can subpoena the person's records civilly, and that means the bad accidents, they're going to find out anyway. Where I have an issue with this, I support the concept of stopping it. I don't like using the term DUI-E. Because to me, a DUI is a very serious, egregious offense that over the course of the last few decades has really become a scarlet letter and a detraction on someone's character who gets convicted of it, and rightfully so. But to loop in somebody texting and it's called a DUIE, I just don't like that. I think DUI has to stand alone as its own serious offense, and texting while driving should be separate. So that's just a titling thing, and I hope they get rid of that. But That's all. Thank you.
And I have to say, I agree with Mr. Kinane on that. Yes, sir.
Ms. Fenton. Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make a motion that we recommend town council approval of resolution requesting state general assembly to pass H.R. 3355 to protect the citizens of this state from driving, distracted driving, texting, and texting while driving, as written by the ordinance.
All right. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. I guess the discussion I have would be the same. Is there a way to express our support with, about this, but say that driving under the influence is something in which you are impaired and you remain impaired for a period of time? This is more of a distraction. You can't do a field electronic sobriety test, you know, but you can do for the others. So perhaps we can do that. Is that okay?
I'm okay with it.
Okay. All right, so we have a motion, second. Any other discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion passes. All right, this brings us to item 5C, review of recommendations to improve the structure of the town council agenda. I will preface this a little bit by saying there are several things we need to do. One is it's just because the size of the town we are. The other is the magnitude of the issues we're faced with. But when you look at the analysis that the clerk of council gave us, six of our last 12 meetings have lasted between 4.5 and 5.5 hours. And a lot of that is awards and recognition, executive session, and those type things. And so if you remember, was it a month ago or 2 months ago?
Yeah, a month ago.
At a previous meeting, yeah. we asked you all to come back and make some recommendations of a way we can improve the structure of the town council agenda. And along a line that was said earlier, by one of our citizens. This really bothered me when some folks showed up to talk about us making a street safer in their neighborhood, and young families, and they ended up having to leave because our meeting went 4.5 hours, and this was on the very end of the meeting. And so that was not a night when we were giving them good government. They came here for something. We should have been able to get our business done. And as they teach us all when we go to the Municipal Association, it is a public meeting, but it is not the public's meeting. It's council's meeting to be public. It's to do our business in front of the public. And so we are looking for ways to where if you show up to see us do our business, you're not going to have to leave to go home and take care of your family. You're going to see us do it. It can be done because in that analysis, meetings used to be an hour to an hour and a half, and then they were 2.5. And now they're 4.5 and 5.5 hours. And the other thing one of our council members mentioned after our last meeting, when we go into executive session and we're faced with making settlement details on multi-million-dollar cases, we're pretty tired. We're worn out. Some of us mad at each other. So we need to do a better job at that. And so let's take a look at some ways we could revise our agenda and see if we can make our meetings more efficient. So, Mr. DeMora, I'll turn it over. And thank you all for your work on this. I know you all had some meetings and done a lot.
Thank you, Mayor. Glad to help, glad to do it. Last month, I had reviewed some of the ideas, and you had asked us to go back and take another 30 days and refine some and work on some others. And so we've been doing that. Christiane's been leading the charge on it, and she's prepared to present.
Good morning.
Thank you, Ms. Farrell.
Hey. Mayor Haney, that was a good introduction. Last month we did kind of give you all an overview of some potential changes. You asked us to go back and look at it a little bit more in detail, which we have done with exactly the things in mind, or trying to streamline, increase the efficiency, and get to the business part of the meeting more quickly. And I thought that probably the best way to illustrate this was to actually take one of our old agendas and show you what it would look like with some of our recommendations. Okay. So with that, hopefully you can see it. If not, I've got some hard copies. I think you can read that. So with that, what I'd like to do is kind of just run through this agenda and outline where the changes are and see if y'all have any questions with any of that. Our ordinance, as a reminder, actually sets up, the town's ordinance is set up this particular framework for order of business for a council meeting. So if we make any of these changes, it would require an amendment to our ordinances for the order of business for the meetings. So a couple of these things are, I think, are extremely minor and will only save, a minute here, a minute there. But the first one is to actually remove the compliance with the Freedom of Information, because we wouldn't be having a meeting if we weren't in compliance with Freedom of Information. So that's the first item that you would see. The second is with respect to the awards and presentations. We have a lot. And so our recommendation is really try to limit those a little bit more, to try to identify those things that are truly significant. And so those would be the only things that we would include. Years of service for employees. Right now we do 20, 25, 30 years. Those are all recognized at council. And so what we would recommend is at least moving the 20 years back down into the committees, like we do for all the others, and only keep the 25 and 30 at the council level. Just as a matter of information, this year's going to be a big year. We have 29 employees who are going to hit the 20, 25, and 30-year marks. So that's a lot. Says something about the town, I think, in a good way. But we would recommend moving the 20s back into the committees. Save a little bit of time if we've got 29 people coming up this year. Another one that we would actually recommend removing is the Employee of the Month. And this is something that actually our Employee Recognition Committee has been working on a lot lately. They have some fantastic ideas to try to recognize employees a little bit differently in unique ways. Right now, Employee of the Month, it typically ends up being fire or police. And so they've explored some ideas that we can do that would bring in some of the other departments and their unique ways to perhaps recognize employees. So that would be our recommendation as well, is to remove that. And so those, I think, are things that are up in the beginning of the agenda that are probably pretty simple to change and would save us a little bit of time. So looking a little bit further on this sheet, so switching over to the other side here with respect to public comment, that would be probably one of our first more significant changes. And, Mayor, you just did this at the beginning of this meeting. Was the recommendation to move all public comment to the beginning of the meeting rather than having the opportunity at the beginning and with the items. And the goal, again, is to let y'all get to your business. So let the folks speak about whatever their item is that maybe will appear later on the agenda at this point in time, and then you all can move into your meeting part of the business.
And if I may interrupt, we do have people who come and see general comments, public comment, and they say, well, I'm here to speak on affordable housing or something like that, right? And then it's way down the list, and it's either hours and hours, or it gets tabled or deferred or something, and they go, well, dang, I should have spoken in public comments so we would at least hear what they're thinking. So I don't know if the committee feels this way. I don't think this is limiting or reducing public comment. If anything, it's making sure we actually hear what people who showed up had to say. Is that y'all feel that way? Y'all got a lot more. We got the senior members here, not in age, just in service, mind you.
Yeah. To be honest with you, I was the one that wrote that ordinance years ago. I think it was 1998, 98048, I believe, is the ordinance title. And the intent was to have them at the beginning of the meeting. It wasn't done like that, but I have no issue with that. I think that's the right thing, because that was the intent, was to have people come up at the beginning, and we can make notes on their comments so that when the item comes up, we can always refer to the notes.
Right.
So I'm good. I'm all in favor of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
And actually, we've been doing that in the planning committee, trying to encourage everyone to talk up front, and it's worked very well.
Yes. Keep going.
Related to that, we have also included in there, you could consider limiting the amount of time that folks would speak. We have provided a consideration of 1 minute per individual. Right now, your ordinance actually says 1 minute to 3 minutes.
Right.
So you've got a range, and we've, of course, been using two. This is obviously something y'all would need to discuss, whether or not you feel there are certainly some folks that come very prepared and know how to deliver their message in 1 minute. There's other folks who are nervous and not used to doing this, and they have a tendency to take a little bit longer. But that can be another consideration.
Excuse me, Mr.
Yes,
Mayor.
Sir.
I like to keep it at two. For instance, if you notice, Mr. Brock got up there, and he had 2 full minutes of given us some very good information. If you cut it to one, I think you're going to have information that they want to give us that there's just no way they can get it out in 1 minute.
I agree.
So I think two is a happy medium. You're right. It was meant up to three. No mayor since that was written has ever done that. It's always been two. But I just think two is plenty because there is a lot of information, and at least it gives them an opportunity to tell us what they really feel instead of packing everything into 1 minute.
Okay.
Yep.
The next item that we have would also be a more significant change is to allow for consent agenda items. And so done a little bit of reading to try to understand, and after review of it, our recommendation would be, at least to start with, that this could only be for items that are up for final reading that had a unanimous approval the month before. So it planning items or town council business items, things that it was very clear that it had the consent of the entire body. There are some rules about consent agendas. If there is an item on there that somebody is uncomfortable with that they want to talk about, then that particular council member can have it removed, and that's automatic. There's no discussion. That's the way it happens. That item would be removed to the appropriate place on the agenda. If we do this, there's some other things that we have to do relate back to Robert's rules and is in addition to our ordinances. But this is something that we would think would at least get some of the items through fairly quickly. And then as a secondary consideration, not only with the consent items, but also the rest of your agenda items, we would also recommend a change in the ordinance where currently it says the administrator has to read the title of the ordinance. We would recommend a change that he just has to read the ordinance number. And this will, again, just save time. So we've tried to make them shorter, but they're still a little bit long. So instead, he could just say final reading of 00123.
Show me one. Okay, C number three there, under consent agenda items,
mm-hmm.
Final reading. So we vote on that, and somebody goes, move to approve, and it's unanimous. Well, that's on the consent agenda. But let's say an item by item. Let's say it's another item, uh-huh. And it passes. So after we do it and we take the vote, and then I remember that the town administrator, which took me a long time to remember, is going to read the ordinance. Right now he reads everything, an ordinance to zone, blah, 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 and the number. What would he be reading at that point?
He would just say final reading of ordinance number 18040. That's it.
Is there any state law that governs that, or?
Yes, sir. I mean, just understand that these were our agenda rules, and all of this were put in a time before electronic. And so almost everything we see comes from the perspective of just reading it out. And that may be important to you. That's a decision, a policy decision, but there's no restriction on how we do that.
And when we do this, it's all up on the screen anyway.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and so to be clear, the title would still be on the agenda. It's just for the purpose of reading it. We wouldn't read the whole title.
Okay. Yes. I'll start with you. Ladies first.
With the consent agenda items, when you say a council member can remove the item, would they need to remove that in advance of the meeting?
At the meeting.
So at the actual meeting, you could still remove it to the next portion.
Say, I would like to move item number 3-1. Because I have some questions about it. I would like to have some discussion about it or something, whatever your reason is.
And then is it permitted to bundle these items together? So if you have, portion number 3, you say consent agenda items 3-1 through 3-4, move to approve all 4, we can do that in one fell swoop? Or
Yes.
Yes, okay.
It would all be done at once. And so and this would be something we would probably want to start easy with, like I said, just things that are up for final reading that had unanimous approval, things that we pretty much don't anticipate that there's going to be any concern. So annexations or things of that nature would be how we'd start. And if it's successful, then maybe we could expand it a little bit.
In a sense, we kind of do that now because we have council members say, I'd like to move for final approval of items 3, 6, 9, and 10, and we do it.
That's right. And this will kind of simplify it even more.
Grouping them together so that you know those are going to be approved. Okay. Yes, here.
You kind of answered my question because I was going to use annexation as an example. But when you say remove an item, you're talking about removing it off of the agenda?
Sure. It would just be moved to either, if it was a planning item, it could be moved to the planning part of the agenda, or if it was a council item, it could be moved to the council part of the agenda. And so what we would have, very much like we have the explanation on the regarding an executive session, we would also have an explanation on the agendas about consent items and how the process works for if items were to be moved.
I'd just like to see an example of that sometime. I don't need it now. Of what it would look like, that's all.
Yeah, well, if you, for whatever reason, you like that that PI2 request right there, if you had some concern about it, then you, Mr. Santos, just as one council member, could say, you know what, I've got some questions on this one. Can we please move this one over to planning, new business?
Okay, good.
Or old business, rather, because it would be final reading, old business.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, you.
All right, let's keep going then. All right, so planning would generally stay the same, except for if items had been moved over to the consent, they would not appear here anymore under the old business section. The next, I think, significant change that we talked a little bit about last month as well is the committee reports. Change that actually to committee action items only. So there would not be reports given by every single committee, and you all know too, often when we get into these long agendas, your chairman just submits them anyway for the record without going through them. So this would remove the reports. We would have the minutes from all the committee meetings available, and they can even be linked through the agenda. And so this would only be action items included for this part of the agenda. Okay. Something that's, I think, probably a minor change is just to remove the administrator's report. Typically, that's just announcing that we've got some sort of vacancy, and I don't know that people are listening to hear what the vacancies are that are coming up. They're usually a little more looking on the website to see what things might be available. So this is that kind of is it with respect to the agenda and how it would look different if we moved with this new order of business. We do have two additional items that I wanted to cover with you as well for your consideration. The first one is a possibility of starting meetings a little bit earlier. And that would be for the purpose of kind of getting those things that are awards, presentations, those things of those nature, perhaps out of the way so that you could really begin your business meeting hopefully by about 6 p.m. because, as you know, it really almost takes about half an hour. Even though we're trying to streamline, it can take as long as 30 minutes to get through much of that. We have a lot of meetings already through in planning that start actually at 5, and Planning Commission has done it for as long as I've been here. DRB, Old Village, they all begin at 5 o'clock. So this is just a suggestion of perhaps backing it up so that you can really get to your business a little bit earlier. And then the final one that we discussed last time has to do with the ability for council members to add items to the agenda. And so right now the ordinance, this one that's up here, the 30.34B, says that any council member can place an item on the council agenda. And so one recommendation or suggestion that we have is to modify that a little bit further so that it's clear that it really should go through the committee process first as long as that's available, and that it would only be placed on the council agenda if for some reason it was not able to be placed on the committee. And so that's
What about moving executive session?
Well,
I understand we don't want to convene and then immediately go off into the closet. But it would be nice, from my standpoint, to be a little fresher and a little less tired when we go into that.
We talked about that, and that was really how we ended up landing at the 5:30 time.
Okay.
Because the concern was that, you know, you don't know how long you're going to be in the executive session, and if you convene the meeting and you're back there for 5 minutes or you happen to be back there for 45 minutes, we thought perhaps just moving up the start time of the meeting might get to some of the concerns that y'all have about trying to do that executive session at the end of the meeting.
Okay.
And I think what came up, too, was that if it went earlier, prior to public comment, then you'd have to be taking on items in executive session where the public didn't have a chance to comment on it. So
that's true.
That was one other
consideration.
I guess it would be possible, and well, I'm not going to think out loud. Go ahead. GM and then Gary.
So the one concern I have with part the amending of Section 30.34B is that if you don't have a committee that is favorable to your idea, but the potential is that there are five members of council who are not on the committee who might be favorable to your idea, that that idea will never get heard by the full council. So I think if something dies in committee and a council member wants to put it before the full council, I think that, because otherwise I think it gives too much power to the committee and it's sort of who's on the committee that makes a difference, and there might be important matters that five members of council would be in favor of, and if you couldn't find a committee to get you there, I think being able to put it on the agenda is important.
Gary?
You took the words right out of my mouth. That, and as well as if an issue comes up after the committee meetings have already taken place, then it is germane to something that's going to be on there, that they ought to have the opportunity to put it on there as well. So I agree with Jim. I don't really care for Section 30.34 right now, the way it's written.
So if I may, Mayor?
Yes.
What you're saying, it would require another level of screening at committee before it can go directly, so it has to either not take into a vote or a failed vote, and then, so it still has to go to committee
first. I think things should still have to go to committee first, but I'm saying if it dies in committee, so that there's an opportunity for staff to vet things, to do research, for it to come before committee, and for other council members to have an opportunity to sit in committee meeting and hear from it. And if you see that there is support outside the committee for the issue and the committee declines to put it on the agenda, that you could then put it on the council agenda.
Yes, and what I'm saying is if an item comes up, say today, we finish our committee meetings, and tomorrow or the next day something comes up that's relevant to what we're working on, we ought to be able to put it on there. Because it's time sensitive or something. So if you're saying you can't do that, you have to wait till the committee process all the way around again. So we ought to always have the opportunity to do it, to put it on there. And if it's something that council doesn't want to talk about or whatever, we can just defer it and move on. I mean, we have the right to defer anything that comes up. So we defer it and move on. It won't take 2 seconds.
Right. Comments on this? Yes, sir.
Thank you again, Mr. Mayor. Kevin Kinane, 3032 River Vista Way. I'd like to echo my colleagues, Ms. Whitley and Mr. Santos, on that 30.34B. And I like to color it a little bit more as well. I came on council after the committees were already established. And coincidentally, I'm not a chairman of any committee. So I can't put anything on an agenda on my own free will. And it creates a kind of a pecking order amongst council where if you're a chairperson, you have certain power, and if you're not, you have different power. I don't think that's the intent of the design of the council form of government that we have. So I think that one's tough to change. I understand people don't want to talk about something, then say in front of the public why you don't want to speak about it. It's fine. Happened to me last month. Things get kicked, you know, but I noticed a couple months ago Mr. Bremer had put a item on planning that related to transportation. And it went through. Everybody agreed with it. It was a great thing. He put on something that everyone agreed with. But that all requires the chairperson to say, okay, we'll let it through. So it creates a situation where some council members become kind of second-rate citizens on the council where they have to go through the chairperson for everything. So that one needs to be reworked. But thank you, sir.
All right. Yes, sir. Mr. Bustos.
A couple of things.
Thank you.
One, I think 5:30 is about the earliest we want to go because we need to let people get home, perhaps get something to eat, and then come to town hall. So, you know, at one point we started at 7. And I think 5:30 is early enough. And this, I've always felt that the introduction, you know, things should be introduced two ways to the committee. One is a topic can come up during discussion at council, and council can say, you know, PLJ committee, would you, you know, look at that and bring back a recommendation? Or one of the council members could bring something to the committee. I almost believe that perhaps in committee we shouldn't be able to say, I don't want to hear that. If it relates to the committee, you know, planning and fire, that the topic should be discussed, because if we don't do that, as I've been listening to us today, that would go to council with no discussion and would probably be kicked back to committee to be vetted. So why don't we just go ahead and let it go to committee, tell the committee chairman, you know, if this is something that falls within your committee's purview, go ahead and put it on the committee, have the discussion. That'll save us time in the council meeting for all the ping pong back and forth. And if the council isn't predisposed to pass it, it ain't gonna pass. But at least we would have the committee look at it, and I think committee should look at all these things before it gets to the council. So I'm thinking that perhaps if it falls within the purview of your committee, the chairman should put it on. If it comes up with a no recommendation, so be it. Then the person who submitted it will probably take it to council. But at least at that point, we would have had a discussion beforehand, and you could, during the council meeting, just say, you know, we've looked at it in committee, and we don't want to have, and no one, it'll die for lack of a second.
Okay.
See what I'm saying?
I have a question, Mr. Pagliarini. In Robert's rules, there is a stated limit of 10 minutes on debate per item. Do we have a history of ordinances where we have changed rules? You know, does the town have something that says anybody can speak as long as they want on any item? Or do we do what Robert's rule says?
Yes, sir. We don't have a specific ordinance regarding debate. And okay. we defer to Robert's rules okay. for those scenarios. Yes, sir.
Okay. And then from the state standpoint, is there a directive, I guess, in how we conduct our public business? I mean, in my view, and I don't know if I'm totally right on this, we're there to vote in public, right? That's basically what we're there for. We do committee work, we get staff input and all this stuff, but we're there to vote in public. And so the more we just debate in public and think out loud and throw out hypothetical amendments we'd like to make or whatever, we're forcing people to sit through a long period of time on things that don't even have any support.
Right.
So I guess what I'm getting at, and when it comes back to the agenda, for the full council agenda, I mean, we have some things today, consideration or discussion of. Okay, I get that at the committee, but in the full council meeting, aren't we there to vote? I mean, if a council member says, well, I want to have a discussion about so-and-so, well, there's no motion, there's no committee work, there's no, you know, basically what everybody's going to say is, hey, this belongs in the finance committee or education committee or whatever. So I'm just asking, you know, if everybody can put anything on the agenda, I mean, we could be discussing UFOs. I mean, you know, I'm just asking, you know, what is the structure intended for a council meeting?
Sure, and first of all, that is the structure. We, of course, many jurisdictions, there's no position as to whether we have awards and ceremonies and committee reports and all of those things. So at its base function, it is for council for action items. Doesn't mean you can't discuss items. In fact, I think that's one of the tenets of open government is, before we do something, let's discuss it. And whether that's done at a council meeting or the committee structure, I think is this council's prerogative. I will say that the follow-up discussion, one thing that we feel needs to be improved is how to get a matter on the committee agenda. And I think that's what many of you have referred to. If you'd like to improve the structure, let's get some clear rules on how it gets on the committee agendas and make that clear and definitive rather than what we have now. I think that would go towards solving a lot of those issues. Finally, there are those limits on debate, and there's nothing better than move to call the question, as any council member can do when we get to a debate, and that's been utilized in the last few months very successfully.
Right.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir.
You know, when I was first elected in 1996, needless to say, I was the low person on the totem pole, and it was difficult to get things on the agenda. This same ordinance, 98048, we were just talking about up to 3 minutes for someone to come address council. Before that, if you wanted to address council and, you know, you would come up, the mayor could tell you, look, that's a public service problem. Take it to public services. You weren't allowed to do it. And so it was not going to be put on the agenda. The only way I could get it into the public was to put it on council's agenda. So it didn't go to committee and it came on the agenda. We got first reading and then it went back to the committee and we discussed it and it ended up passing. So I hate not allowing a council member. The council member is elected by the people of the town, represent the people of the town, and if they have an idea or something that they want to put on there, we ought to let it be on there. And as he just said, you know, if the debate's going to be long, call for the question, or else we defer it and move it. So there's things that we can do so it's not going to be on that agenda or it's not going to be discussed for a long time. But I think if they're elected by the people and they're speaking on behalf of the people, they should be able to put it on the agenda.
All right. So where do we go from here? Did we get through all your recommended changes?
We did.
I kind of
got a slide that kind of wraps it up, and we could get your direction from here. From everything, or at least your responses, I gather that the changes to the order of business seem to be acceptable to everyone. Let's see, regarding the public comments, I gather that everyone seems okay with moving those up to the beginning, but you want to keep the time frame that we've had. Consent agendas, that we will add that. We'll make the modification that the administrator only has to read the title. And so I think that we're maybe still have a little bit of work to do on this 30.34B regarding placement, but I gather everything else with the structure of the agenda sounds acceptable to everyone. And then there are some steps that we have to take that are really related to Robert's rules regarding the consent agenda, and so we would kind of fold that in. So I think we're ready, except for whatever additional work perhaps on that 30.34 section.
Mr. Pagliarini, if we take action on some version of this today, would it be first reading this coming Tuesday?
If that is what the committee wishes, we would do first reading on Tuesday.
Okay. And so we'd have public input again there. We'd have public input again at second reading.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Is there a motion?
Yeah, I move that we recommend to council to amend the sections of the ordinance as listed above, except for the 30.34B, to change the agenda.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Sir, any further discussion?
Yeah, I just want clarification.
Sure.
You talked about the public comments, regarding public comments, and to add, which one are you talking about, 30.34B?
I'm saying we're not doing the one about placement of items, the
okay.
Councils. We're taking that
right.
out.
Okay.
So we're not going to change that.
And that is not moving public comment to only 1 minute.
No. We would keep that.
Keep
we would keep it the way it's already
way it
written,
already
which
is.
Says the 1 to 3.
Got
so it's really more the policy decision I'll have.
Got it.
But it would move all public comments to the beginning of the meeting.
Okay.
Rather than per item.
And would it be possible to amend 30.34B to basically what Councilman Bustos said, which is the chairman must place the, you know, if an item fits for the agenda, the chairman should place it on the committee agenda. Is that 30.34B as well? Or no, is that something else?
This is the council agenda. This is the monthly council agenda.
Okay.
I know we don't have anything identifying that,
okay.
But that's something that we could fold in under our agendas
okay.
for committees,
okay.
which is what we'd recommend.
Right. Why don't we bring that here next
separately?
Month?
Yeah.
Right now, her vote is to eliminate that, though.
Yeah, it is.
Right. I got it. So your motion eliminates the 30.34B.
We'll proceed with the other.
Proceed with the
other. Proceed with the other. All right. We have a motion, a second. Any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Yeah.
All right. So
okay.
we have
then,
we'll take it to council Tuesday.
Regarding the time of the meeting, I heard a positive comment, at least from Mr. Bustos. Is that?
I think that's something we would want to
roll out slowly and say starting such and such a month?
Have to. We may have to. David and Christine and I could probably talk about that further along with Eric about, since we've already posted the agendas for this year, whether or not that would have to be the timing of when it would, that type of change could occur.
Got it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you all very much. Good work. And let's see. So this moves us to item 5D, discussion of liquor store densities in Mount Pleasant. So I'm going to pour myself a drink and turn it over to Council.
Well, so I placed this item on the agenda at the behest of a citizen of Mount Pleasant who is also a liquor store owner in the town. And ask legal to take a look at it. So essentially in 2017, state law changed and a cap was lifted on the number of licenses that an individual could have of the number of liquor stores. And so there have been more liquor store licenses granted and more liquor stores kind of coming to town. And there is a provision in state law that says that a liquor store license can be denied if there are sufficient liquor stores already in an area. And then I did some additional research and found, like, the CDC has issued a statement regarding liquor densities and public health, liquor store densities and public health and safety. And then I'm not sure, and there's other municipalities that have actually enacted ordinances that limit the densities of liquor stores in a municipality. Now, at the state level, Julia has looked into this. No one has ever challenged or used this sufficient this provision in the code in the law that says that if there are sufficient liquor stores in a town that they can not grant additional liquor licenses in an area. So I don't I'm throwing this out there. This is something that I thought was interesting. Just a quick Google search, there's over 20 liquor stores in Mount Pleasant already, not including, you know, including bottles, and we've got Total Wine coming in. And Total Wine was actually the lobbyist behind getting the number of liquor licenses for the limits of the state limit lifted, and that's been their MO in other states as well. As they've been lobbying to get liquor laws sort of relaxed so that they can come in. So that's kind of where I'm looking at this.
If I may, what's sufficient?
Exactly, and that's the question: is what is sufficient?
Yeah.
And the question is does the town want to make have a position on what's sufficient, or do we want to wait and see how many more liquor stores kind of keep coming in because now that there's no cap?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's, I mean, it's interesting. It's an interesting issue to me. I'm, like I said, I'm not sure where it can go and what we can do as a council, but I know private citizens can make a statement about what is sufficient, but no municipality in the state of South Carolina has ever gone to the state and said, we think what we have now is sufficient. So is over 20 liquor stores in Mount Pleasant sufficient? What would be sufficient? And or do we just want to leave it to the market forces to decide?
Gary? Well, that's what I was going to say. I think we ought to leave it to the market forces to decide, because let's take cigarettes, for instance. They cause cancer. I mean, how many stores are selling cigarettes? And that could be something you could go after, too, and say, you know, shoot, a lot of people dying of cancer. And so where does it stop? Once you get that train rolling and people find more and more things, I think the market forces, your last comment was what I would say. If people aren't buying it, then they'll go out of business. But that's just the way I look at it. I just don't know where you would draw the line and say, okay, where do we stop doing this? Because there's a lot of things out there we could say we really don't need here, but we let the market forces handle that.
And then the other issue that arises is the protection of small business. As part of the reason there were these license caps was to protect small businesses, because industries like what Total Wine has done in coming in is that it often shuts down the smaller businesses because they come in with a 20 to 50,000 square foot facility. And in other states, they've been in violation where they've been selling below cost. And I don't believe the state of South Carolina actually forbids that. Like, you can, and because they have the volume discount and because they can make it up in other places because they're so huge, they can sell for $1 to $6 below their cost of name brand liquors. And that, I mean, it's, again, it's a question of market forces. Do we allow market forces to take out our you know, longtime small business owners in Mount Pleasant who run liquor store, liquor stores. So, again, it's a sufficiency question. So I don't know if there's anywhere that we want to go with this, or if we I wanted to explore this at the behest of a citizen.
Okay.
Well, I was just going to follow up by saying, you know, where does that stop? You can say we've got Home Depot, we got Lowe's, we got Costco that are coming in now, and, you know, what happens to the guys like Royal Hardware and the smaller businesses like that? So we could keep on going and going and going. I think the market forces, what you said was, to me, is more spot on. If they're not going to make it, then they'll fold up and go on their own. But I think when you start doing this kind of thing, I don't know where it would stop. You know, you could. There's, I'm sure. Look at Cabela's, and then we have you know, the store that Mike Abel owns, selling fishing supplies. He was all upset because they came in. You know, where do you stop? You could really go on and on and on with this.
All right. Yes, sir.
Yeah, when it comes to sufficient, I believe also, you know, you could have a bar on every corner, but, and correct me if I'm wrong, Chief, but if someone shows up at a bar who's obviously had too much to drink, they're obligated not to serve them, are they not? So, I mean, that goes to the heart of sufficiency, too. We don't have to give someone every opportunity to have a drink, especially if he's had too much. Do liquor stores have to turn folks away as well?
They do.
Hmm. Okay.
I didn't know that. Thank you.
Not that anybody appears ever been refused service. I know we're looking more at the sales aspect of that, 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 more at the